If you are a fan of the Dive Bar Rockstar podcast and would like to help support the show, there's a great way that you can do that and start a new fashion trend. We have a new merchandise page on the website, which features t-shirts and hoodies that are available for sale on Amazon. Just click on merchandise in the top menu and all of the links will be there, or go directly to divebarrockstar.com/merchandise. Get started early on your Christmas shopping at divebarrockstar.com. Welcome to the Dive Bar Rockstar Podcast, a show exploring the lives of professional musicians of all types, touring musicians, recording artists, songwriters, engineers, bar bands, wedding bands, and anyone making their living in the music industry. Whether you've dreamed of being a professional or you already are one, this is the podcast for you. I'm your host, Eric Baines, and I hope that you not only find some entertainment here, but also some helpful tips, trade secrets, and ideas that will help you achieve your dreams. Well, I'm coming to you from Daytona Beach, Florida today, and I've got a couple days off, so it's a good opportunity to finish up this podcast that I've been working on for a long time. I know it's been a while. Please excuse the situation, because it's been a busy couple months. We've been out on the road quite a bit, and we had a short break that was made even shorter because we had to reschedule a show because of a hurricane in California, which never happens. Lucky us. But it really wasn't that bad. We all survived, and so that's good. It was a lot of rain, though, but at least I was stuck at home, so that was nice. And I'd like to give a shout-out to the fan that was in the front row. We just played in Atlanta a couple nights ago, and we were at Chastain Park, and I walked out, and right in front of me in the front row was a guy with a Dive Bar Rockstar podcast sign holding it up, and it was so great. It was really cool to see that. I really appreciate the support. And he had several signs. He was a Chicago fan. He wasn't there just for me, so I don't want to blow it all out of proportion. But I did really appreciate it. I saw you. I didn't get a chance to get your name, but you know who you are. And I really appreciate it. I really appreciate the support and listening to the show and everything. So thank you, thank you, thank you. So my guest today plays viola, which is a rare instrument. He's probably our first legit string player, and he has a really amazing story. He kind of had a rough start as a kid and got in trouble with the law, but he's worked his way from a halfway house to playing with some of the biggest music stars of all time, like Elton John, Barry Manilow, Yellow Card, Robbie Williams, Christina Aguilera, Taylor Swift, Michael Bublé, John Legend. Like, the list never ends. He's done so many records and TV and film and just everything there is to do in LA as a pedigreed string player. He got his bachelor's degree at Cal State Long Beach and his master's at USC. He's a California native. He's smart. He's funny. He's an incredible musician, and he's been through a lot to get to where he is. It's a pretty inspiring story to me. So please enjoy my conversation with Rodney Wirtz. So why did you pick viola instead of like a cool string instrument?
Well, I didn't pick viola. My junior high school or middle school conductor told me I should play viola. But that's because my mom took away my violin and said, "You're going to woodshop."
Oh,
because
interesting.
I was like, she was like, "Can you play something for me?" And I was like, "No." "But you're going to play something for me, right?" "Nah, I'm cool." And she said, "Well, I'm going to take away your violin and you're going to go to woodshop." And yeah, that's it. And
wow.
So the teacher was like, "Wait, what?" here's a viola. I don't have any viola players. You play this now."
Right.
"Instead of going to woodshop, I don't want to lose a player, because, you know." And so I picked up the viola and I just stuck with it.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting a good teacher in 7th, 8th grade and going to Orange County High School of the Arts and
going to
high school. Yeah. I mean, and then I hit a rough patch. And so I didn't even graduate high school.
Oh.
I didn't even, I went off. I was arrested, and I got into trouble. I was a troublemaker. I wow. got arrested. I got sent yeah. away.
Very interesting. And, yeah, I should tell the people that don't know you, this is a podcast, obviously, but you are not your typical orchestra-looking fellow. You know, if we were going to stereotype a viola player with a master's degree, you are generally not what people, you've got tattoos. I always like you're the punk rock viola guy.
Yeah, I used to go to punk rock shows as a kid. And I started getting tattooed really early, too. And I don't get tattooed anymore. But when I'm at work, 95% of the time, I never show anything.
Right.
I just don't. You know, I had some old contractor years ago that was like, oh, you got to, should dress up nice and probably cover those. And I was like, okay, that's a great idea.
Right.
And so I always wore, and now I'm a little more loose because I don't know if it's, I don't care. I mean.
Yeah, well, you're a little more older.
Am I gotten to that point where I'm like, well, if you, look, you don't have to call me. I don't know, right. you know?
Yeah.
And so now I'll show up and people are like, what? And I'm like, yeah, these are really old. When'd you get those? Long time ago, you know? And so now I'm a little more free. If it's hot out, I'm not wearing long pants.
Yeah.
I'm going to wear my shorts.
Yeah. Well, I think the world is more loose, especially on the tattoo thing. Like,
yeah, I think
like,
so.
It's so, all the young people are doing it.
Yeah, but there's not in our general array, there's not a lot of classical string musicians with a lot of tattoos that I work around. You right. know? And so it's always been taboo, you know. I didn't show my parents for a long time, you know. Mm-hmm. So I've always, but now I'm the older guy now.
Yeah. So you got arrested.
Yeah, I got, and
if
I went
you don't
to
mind
a,
talking
yeah,
about
yeah.
It.
I went to a halfway house. Oh, I lived wow. there for like a year and plus, and then I moved out with one of the guys there, and I was working at an animal hospital making $5.25 an hour.
Wow.
And I was like 19 and 20, and I was like, this is not going to work. Like, I got to figure out something else to do because this is not the way.
Wow.
And I go, well, I guess I could play viola again because that seems like a steady career. So I took the summer and I went back to my old teacher and I learned some pieces, and I was like, I remember when I was in high school, Cal State Long Beach would give away a full scholarship to viola because they need viola
right.
players. So I was like, okay, I'll just do a little practicing. And so I went to the audition and played, and I got a scholarship.
Wow.
Full scholarship. And one of the guys that helped, I still work with today. He's a violin player in town. And I remember him running up, hey, my name's Mark, here's my card, and blah, blah, blah. And I ran into him after I got my master's, and he was like, oh, and he started hiring me and whatnot. So,
wow.
So weird.
Like, that's amazing. So did you like get your GED at that point?
Yeah, I actually, while I was at the animal hospital.
So you had done it.
I decided, you know what, I should go get my adult school diploma.
Mm-hmm.
And so I remember getting it. It was February. The only reason I remember that is because the teacher spelled February wrong. And I didn't quite know how to react.
High quality education.
You know, like, because it was like really remedial stuff. And then for him to spell February, you know, just wrong. I wish I had kept it. I don't know where it is now, but I couldn't show it. My mom didn't care. My parents were like, well, it's about time.
Right, right.
And so that's how I did that. And I had already taken the SAT, and so they had all that. But I was going to actually switch majors. I just wanted to go to a four-year. Because I tried going to a two-year, and I was like, wait, a 25-page essay? Like, I was like, absolutely not. That seems like a lot. But I figured once I'm in it for a year, I could move it around a little bit. But
got you.
I got a really... I started the same year as this conductor, Richard Rintoul. And it was his first year as my first year. And he was also a viola player in town, in the studios and stuff. And he got me this teacher in the Philharmonic... who just kicked my butt. And shockingly, I worked my ass off. Like, I was at Cal State Long Beach, I was taking like 22 units a semester. Took 5 years. But I would practice like 3-4 hours a day. Also work. I started a job at a mortuary and started hauling dead.
Wow.
And my roommates hated my viola playing.
Well.
So I would literally go to the mortuary to practice around dead people.
Wow.
Because they were like, are you going to keep playing? Like, I have to practice. Are you going to do that all night? Or is this right. like half an hour? What can we expect? And I was like, you know, I just felt like I didn't want to subject them to that.
Right.
You know, because they were not musicians. They didn't understand. And so I would go to the mortuary and practice around dead people.
Wow.
Do scales, my etudes. And
it got you ready for the LA audiences.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Just dead. Just like this. Yeah. But yeah, and then at that time I was like, well, you have to go get your master's. And I'm like, huh, what?
But I'm not done.
I'm not done. But that's what everybody was like, you need to go get your master's now. So, and then I was like, well, my teacher at the time was like, well, you need to go to Cleveland Institute of Music and study with Bob Vernon, who was like the pedagogue. He was the person you want to study with. He's retired now. And so I went out there to Cleveland.
Wow.
I went to a few schools to audition. And Cleveland was my first, but I didn't get a really good audition in front of all the teachers because they literally had a concert. And so they were like, well, we got to leave. And so my teacher got really irritated about that. And he was like, you need to go re-audition again. And so I had to fly back out. And he called up his old teacher and said, you need to listen to him play. But then I was like, do I want to live in Cleveland? Like, that's, and I went there in the winter. Holy, I'm from Long Beach, California. Like, I don't have clothes. Like, I was like,
right.
Oh my God, the dead of winter. Like, it's like, how, 20 yeah. degrees? Like, this right. is terrible.
Yeah.
And so he was like, well, you should audition at USC for McGinnis, who is a big viola teacher as well. And I was like, okay. So I went auditioned for him. And he accepted me into his studio, and you get a full ride there too if you're in his studio.
Oh wow!
Like a full scholarship.
Jeez.
Yeah, I got really, really lucky. And actually, I had a huge fight with my ex-girlfriend the night before, so I was up till like 5 a.m, like, one of those young youth arguments.
Yeah.
And so I went, and I was just on like zero sleep. I was like, "This is not gonna go well." And he sat me down. He was like, sit down. I was like, okay. After I got done playing, okay. He was like, I'll take you, but you're going to be like at the bottom of my studio. And I was like, that's great. Fine. I can do that, you know?
Right.
And so I walked in there and those cats were like really good, like really, really good.
Wow.
And I was like, well, I got to work hard.
Yeah.
So I kept working hard. And so
were you like surrounded by viola players? Is that what you mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow.
The people in my studio were like ridiculous. Uh-huh. Like where I was like, we had to play each week in studio class, and like they'd play and I'd be like, I can't believe I have to play next week. Like this is absolutely insane.
Wow.
Like they're going to all think I suck. But I worked out, you know, I just practice.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. So at that point, did you have a vision of exactly what it would be like to make your living as a viola player in Los Angeles?
I had this idea in my head what it was going to be like. Mm-hmm. But when I got into reality, which they don't teach you in school.
Right.
They don't teach you, like, you're the best, you graduate master's, take on the world.
Right.
Great. Go out and, like, you're playing community orchestras, like, right out of school, and you're like, oh, my God. Like, and then you get your paycheck and you're like, oh my God, I need to do about 10 of these a week.
Right.
This for like, what? You get penny. And it was just embarrassing.
Yeah.
And you just got to play for people and be a person you want to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And like, that's what I always strove to be. Like, always assume I'm out of tune and adjust. And I don't know. There's these things. I mean, it's still hard. You know, it's not like I've made it and like cool. There's times where I'm like, I need a job. Like,
right.
You know, yeah. It's feast or famine. I'm yeah. either working my ass off or yeah. like I'm twiddling my thumbs on the couch.
Yeah.
And it's not a good way to live.
Oh, man.
Especially
for
those
of
heart.
You listening that have dreams of being a musician. Don't do it.
Yeah, it's hard. Like,
it is. Well, you have to adjust to it, I think. Well, you have two kids, and I just have my first, so it changes the pressure for sure. And if you don't have, I don't know what your wife does, but mine isn't into music, and she's always had a steady paycheck, so that causes lots of problems. It's the way that we live, like you say, it's future famine. Like, so when it's famine, I'm never worried too much because the phone might ring, and then you're living high on the hog for a second. You know, that's hard for people that just get a steady paycheck, you know, to deal with.
I know. My wife is an oboe player, and we actually met at USC,
mm-hmm.
and that was 02 I met her.
Got it.
Here we are, like, sorry, I'm just holding back tears. 21 years ago. I'll power through. But, and it's, you know, and she's a brilliant musician, but like any musician, like there's only one oboe,
right.
maybe two on a job,
right.
where there's at least 8 to 10 violas. So
interesting.
It's even harder for wind players, you know?
Yeah.
Because there's less people on the jobs.
Right.
She's been working at this organization called Harmony Project. Mm-hmm. She's like second to the executive director and sort of brings in all the money. And so she raised about $5.9 million
Jeez.
This year.
Wow.
And so she just actually accepted another job, put in her resignation for something completely out of music, but sort of the same, raising money. And
right.
But like when the pandemic came, I remember March 13th, boom, the emails from all the contracting services in town, boom, 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 cancel.
Yeah.
And I remember being in a session March 12th being like, I'm like, COVID, someone here has it. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
I went down the wormhole, like just on Twitter, you know. And people would be like, you're crazy, Rodney. I'm like, look at it's on Twitter. They're like, you're crazy.
Well, back then, there's not a vaccination, and you can't work. I mean, even now, it's like, I guess it's kind of, I feel the best now than we have in a long time. But it's like, if you get strep throat, you're going to go to work. It's probably still going to be irresponsible. You're going to pass it around.
I know.
But if you get COVID, you're done. Even though you're vaxxed, most people are vaxxed, like, no one's going to die now.
Exactly.
You know, most likely. You can die from strep throat if you're elderly, you know, or the flu or things, but they're not going to test you and say, oh, you can't go in this building, you know? So back then, it was just, it was scary.
It was, but luckily, my wife had a full-time job.
Yeah.
So all I did was deal with the kids. She worked the whole time, and I, you know, and so that was brilliant.
Yeah.
For her to have a steady paycheck.
Yeah.
We really dodged a bullet there.
Yeah.
You know,
back to the original point of like the money situation, at least you both have an understanding of the situation. Doesn't necessarily make it better, but it's great that, now she's working. So, you know what you call a musician without a girlfriend or a wife? Homeless. You know?
Homeless.
So you're living up to that
terminology. That my other, how do you get a musician to complain?
Oh.
Give him a job.
Give him a gig.
I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and I find that myself, like, how dare they schedule two rehearsals and a concert, like, all uppity. Like,
I know.
Instead of being like, wow, this is great. Yeah. We're working all day. Both of us are working. We're making money. Like, woo.
No. Yeah.
How dare they?
Yeah.
How could they do that to us?
I know. Yeah. I know. I. It's funny being on the gig that I'm on now, because I've been doing this since I was 19, so 32 years. I got this gig last year. It's the first gig that I have zero complaints. There's nothing I can even say. Everything is so great. I could make some stuff up because it's in my nature, because I am a musician. So hang in there. I don't know. It took me that long to get something. I'm holding on tight while I got the gig.
You got it. A steady job is worth, in the musician world, I get W-2s and 1099s. And literally, you could, if you were to go buy a house, you could take these 1099s, it doesn't matter, X amount of money, and they'd be like, I don't know what these are. I'm going to throw these right in the trash. I need to see your W-2s from your employer.
Right.
But.
Yeah.
No.
I know.
You
know.
So when you get that steady job with taxes taken out, it's like a miracle.
I know.
You know.
Yep. I was really lucky during the pandemic because I did have W-2s. So the unemployment came immediately. Versus it took a while to pass a law about the 1099s. And then if, depending on how that balanced out, you could be messed up anyways. If you
made
too much W-2 and not enough 1099, you know, either way, you'll get lower unemployment. But during the pandemic, there was the extra $600 a week from the government, you know?
That was
so
crazy.
It was like, I could get used to this. I guess I'll start a podcast.
Is what that when you started?
Yeah. I did like 29 episodes that year.
Wow. Jeez.
And then the next year I got back to work, I did 3.
That, it's hard when you get back to real life, like with kid, like.
Because it's a lot of work.
Well, what do you
do? I didn't have a kid. You know, I had a kid during the pandemic. So when I started it, it was like, that was my job, you know, and this takes about 20 to 25 hours an episode to edit and research. And
really?
Yeah.
That's
like,
wild.
It's getting a little faster now. I've done it so many times, but like, it's
work.
It's a labor of love, you know.
When you go out on tour, your wife is here solo with child.
Yes.
So is there any animosity towards that?
Well, she's also unemployed now.
Oh.
So it's a lot less. Yeah, it was like kind of, you know, her job sort of went the way it was. It ended, and we were just like, this is better, you know, because I've got a good job. Let me go out and do the thing. You can watch the kid, and, you know, when I get back, it's like she hands me the kid and like, okay, your turn. You know? And I can't complain because I get the most sleep on the road, you know, because we have days off sometimes, and like, you know, I actually get to sleep, you know, so I don't talk to her much about how nice the hotels
are. Absolutely not.
Never mention that.
Absolutely
if it's a Four Seasons, I don't dare tell her. That's her favorite hotel.
It's wild. You know, when I went out with John Legend because my friend called me and I just had my first Madeline. Like it was like February of 2014. And I remember we were in Manhattan Beach or Hermosa Beach. We were dropping my wife's friend off at the airport to come to visit the kid. Mm-hmm. And I get this call and I'm like, what terrible timing. What terrible timing. So I remember talking to my wife about it. I go, well, I mean, I'll have a steady pay. And that was supposed to be like 6 weeks. And I was like, it's only 6 weeks. I know it's a lot, but my mom could probably come up. Your parents could come down.
Right. And her mom comes out sometimes.
Yeah.
Like once a month, maybe sometimes.
And so she was like, and Maya's parents love John Legend. So that helped.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, cool. Okay. And she was like, yeah. And then I remember us planning all this stuff and the tour manager was like, what are you doing? I'm like, we planned this trip to Hawaii in summer. He's like, why? Well, why not? It's summer. Like, what? He's like, you're not going to be in town. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about right now. It's 6 weeks.
Wow.
He's like, it is not 6 weeks. I'm like, excuse me?
Oh,
I had no idea. And that 6 weeks turned out, the first leg was 14 weeks, 12 to 14 weeks on a bus.
Oh, I've been there. Oh my gosh.
I was like, and so my mom would come up for a week. Her parents would come down for a week. And then her best friend, Sergio, he recently quit his job. So we moved him in to the house. And we'd pay him for 2 weeks and he could live there that free. And we'd pay him to just watch the kid while my wife was at work.
Wow.
And it worked out. Like I can't believe it. When we were gone, I was gone till December.
Yeah. I was literally going to ask you about that.
Sorry, I'm all over the place.
Well, no, it's just funny that you went right to the kid thing because that was one of the, you know, I knew you had kids. So it's, I was trying to work out the dates of like, oh, your kids were like right there. So that,
that's 3 months.
Tricky.
And then.
And as a string player, road gigs aren't necessarily what you're thinking about, right? How big was the string section?
It was a quartet.
Oh, geez.
Quartet and with a guitar player. And then they added like bass and drums and whatnot for the summer and the fall.
Gotcha.
And which was great. You know, it was so much fun. I got to see the world, literally see the world. Like I was like, can't believe I'm here. Mm-hmm. And we got treated great. And I mean, it was spectacular. I mean, it was just like so much fun. And bought my house in November of 2014 and then proceeded to be told at the end of November of 2014 that he was no longer going to go this direction with the string quartet. Mm. And I was like, we bought a fixer-upper. Oh my God.
Maybe we should take it slow.
So I have to come back into town and try to like reintroduce myself because you leave.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, he's always gone. You could be at home for like 3 months and be like, oh, we thought you were on tour. Like, what are you talking? Like, what are you talking about?
I know. That's why I never tell anybody I'm out, really. You know, it's like, just keep calling. Just let me say no.
Yeah.
You know, and I never say, oh, I'm on the road until blah, blah. I'm like, oh, I'm not available.
That's what I do too. Yeah. It doesn't matter what I could not want to do the job, and I'll be like, I am not available that day.
Right, right.
People say some whack stuff to me now that I contract strings where you're like, you don't need to say that to me. Like, literally just say no.
Right.
You don't need to give me a lecture about stuff.
Right.
You know, like, oh, man. Because that makes me not want to call you anymore.
Right.
Like, just say no. I don't take it personally.
Make this answer as short as possible and hopefully just a text or an email.
I recently had one. I don't know if we want to edit this out. One character.
Still mention names.
I know. One character sent me an email about, it was like this, it was a decent job, you know, West Coast, of course, you know, and like.
Yeah.
He's and it was like it was a cutoff message like, I don't think that's in your budget, thanks. And I was like, I don't even know what that means. Like, I didn't really put a budget out there. I just said, this is what you're gonna get paid.
Right.
And I sent an email back with like a couple question marks, like, what? You'd think at that time the person would be like, maybe I shouldn't say that. Here's a good time to fix it. Oh, I'm not available. Sorry. Sends the same email. Sorry. No, it says, sorry that didn't got cut off, but here's what it was. And it was like, why are you telling me this? Like, you demand this much money for this because you could have just said no.
Yeah. Totally.
You know, just say no. That's what I do.
Yeah. Cause that goes in for me. That's in the never call again. Never call again pile.
I know. And I hate to be like that, but
yeah,
I did hire a bunch of other people that said yes. And they'll always be called before this person now because they said yes and they were cool about it.
Yeah. And like, even the low money gigs, like, I don't want to turn everything down because sometimes you're going to need that.
Yeah.
You know, whatever, $200 or whatever it is.
We do a lot of demo sessions.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it's, the rate is so bad.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally like $25 to $30 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like 3 to 4 hour calls.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like,
oh, gosh.
What? I mean, I remember.
It barely seems worth it.
Well, like literally, but there are contractors in town you have to say yes to. Like, you need to say yes to these people and be anxious and eager to work, which we all are.
Right, right.
But when you're like, I have to get a sitter for $15-$20 an hour.
Yes.
And you show up to work and you're like, oh my God, this is just not going well for me today because I'm like zero money.
Right.
And I'm spending all this time out here. And will it help me in the long run? Who knows?
Right.
It may not help me.
May not. Or you might be sitting next to somebody who thinks you're great and then he calls you on the next John Legend tour.
Exactly.
You know, it's
exactly.
Feast or famine. You know?
I know. And it's.
Yeah.
I mean, literally.
But that's the game.
The
for
heart.
Sure.
Just up and down and stress. And it's a hard business to be in.
Yeah. And that when people get all weird about money sometimes, I mean, obviously, you know, there's an argument to be made about like, you shouldn't be working for $20.
Yeah.
But at the same time,
if you want to really make a living, you got to do as many jobs as you can, and the money is not always the issue.
Exactly.
Like that's a perfect example. You know, and sometimes it's networking. Sometimes just if you're playing a live at a club or something, even people are going to see you. That matters. Yeah. You know, like.
Well, we don't do that so much being a string player. There's right. some string players that are great playing the club. Like I'll do it.
Yeah, just, right. but I mean, even like vibrato or something. Like some places that sometimes have bigger ensembles. I don't know.
I just play there. I play with this. She was a violinist in town, but she got injured. She doesn't play anymore. But she sings and wants a jazz career and writes all her own songs. Mm. And I'm like her viola. She always comes to me and asks. I'm like, if I'm available, I will do it.
Right.
Like I always have to take, you know, I have a family. So if something better comes along, I'll take it.
Right.
And she knows this, you know, but yeah. I got to do it the other night. It's a lot of fun. Fun crew. Like just, you know, it's not a lot of money, but, you know, I was available.
Yeah.
The kids, there was no issue with the kids, you know. Mm. I don't mind doing it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not like a snob. Like,
right.
Like, if you need help, I'll come help you. Like, you just tell me. Like, I'm not like, I always tell people, if you need anything, let me know. Let's discuss it.
Right.
You know.
That's what I was saying. At least let me say no.
Yeah.
Just keep asking.
Yeah.
Because I want to be in a situation where I'm getting the call. You know?
And I also think that it comes full circle. Like, I feel like I help out a lot of people, and I don't mind it because I get great gigs and I get not so great gigs. And right. I think it sort of evens out.
That's
as long as you're with cool people on a not so great gig, you could just power through.
Oh man. Totally.
You know? And yes. You get a badge of honor, you can talk about it later. Like, remember that job? How awful that was.
Yeah.
You know, I love doing that stuff.
Yeah. Oh man, totally. It's all about the people. The worst thing is to be on with not cool people on a not cool gig and just be like scratching your head sometimes. Yeah, and I was asked about that too. As a string player, it's like people probably rarely say, I need a viola on my gig. They probably approach you, can you get me a string section? Which is what the term that you're using is contracting.
Yeah.
For people who don't know what that means.
Yeah.
So that's something you probably have to do often.
Yeah. And
so you have to have a Rolodex of.
I do have a Rolodex.
Is that a thing anymore? You have to have a phone, I guess.
Yeah. At one point, I'll make a database of people that you like, because it's now become such a national thing. Like, I go to different towns all the time and have to hire strings and have them like trust that I'm going to pay them. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to get paid and it's going to be fair. Mm-hmm. And that they're, you just have to have people trust me. Like, it's weird. Like, when you go to different towns. Like,
right.
And I find that everybody that does at least our jobs that I hire are like, please call me again when you get back in town. This is probably one of the funnest jobs I've done all year long.
That's cool.
You know?
Yeah.
Which is great. Yeah. Which I get to, like, because there's so many times when you're on like this, like a motion picture call, and you're like, this is the worst. This is so not fun.
Yeah.
Because it's all
high pressure.
High pressure. And people are like if you make one mistake, you're out.
Yeah.
You know, like, and you're like on pins and needles. Mm. Like, don't mess up. Don't, you know, don't say the wrong thing. Like,
and you're in Los Angeles with the best players
of
the world.
They are.
Arguably.
Yes.
Especially for that particular thing, especially.
Yes. Like, incredible players. And you just don't want to mess up around them. You know? And it's. And you could just be playing whole notes the whole time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you got to be into it. You got to look alive. You got to, it's so hard. It's exhausting.
I know. I love this conversation. Because that's what I think people, you know, well, at the same time, I think people that aren't in the situation are scared of that. And the reality is that you're right to be afraid of it. If you can't handle that kind of pressure, this is not the town for you. This is not the living for you. It is exactly that. It's everything you're scared of.
Yeah.
And people are scared of, can I read well enough? Probably not if you're scared.
I know. I mean, there's some times where, you know, they give you the music in advance, but it doesn't matter because some of these composers will either do absolutely nothing, like whole notes the whole time. And you're like, this is not exciting, or you'll get the composer that just is like, I'm going to make this as hard as possible for everyone, and we're going to do 6 hours today of it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
You're like, oh my God, What? It, who? Did no one like be like, this may be a little much.
Right,
like,
right, right.
Like, yeah. But LA players.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
And when you say you get the music ahead of time, do you mean like an hour ahead of time or like the night before?
Or night before, usually. Okay, or is, yeah. The best is the morning of.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know if they have sensors on it. So I always open it up like to make sure that my email opened up the music. Like, I don't know if they check. They probably don't check.
Right.
But in my head, I'm like, well, I got to at least open it up so they see that I've clicked on them. Because what am I going to do? Like, trying to get the kids to school.
Right.
Let me practice some whole notes before we get, but right, I got to open it up. But
yeah. Well, don't you at least have to open up to know if it's the whole note session or the crazy session. You
got
to
like mentally prepare, like, ooh, might want to look at that one before we get, you know.
Right.
You get
right.
there early, you go through it, you see.
Oh, that's cool.
Ooh.
All good.
I'm talking a lot, so I start yawning. Is that normal? I read kids' books, and I'm like, I start yawning in the middle of the day.
Well, it's what is it, 7:50 p.m. right now, so I'm just starting to think about the pillow. Like, we're parents. Like, in an hour from now, I might be down, or I'll be drunk. I don't know.
One of the two.
Or both. I mean,
see, all the kids are staying at the in-laws with the cousins, so I'm going to go pick the wife up. We're going to go home.
That's
and
nice.
We get to maybe sleep. I doubt it.
Yeah.
I doubt it. There's never a dull moment.
Yeah. You know? Oh, I know. Well, I had George Shelby on the podcast, and he, one of the greatest things he said, because I was asking about sight reading, because the horn player is kind of similar situation. Like, you're really making your living off of your reading skills to a certain degree, especially because you're also in a section, so you've got to keep up everybody. It's sort mm-hmm. of a lowest common denominator situation, and then you don't want to be that one, you know? but I said, so how do you work on sight reading or learn to sight read? And he's like, never sight read. That's the title of his podcast. And he's like, just don't ever do it. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, well, the session starts at 10, get there at 9,
yeah.
and learn all the music. You know what I mean? So that's, you're kind of reiterating the same thing.
I mean, if you're not there half an hour, I mean, sometimes traffic is bad, but right. I always leave plenty of time to at least sit down, get relaxed, go through some of it and be like, let me just look at that,
right.
You know, because most of the time the music's, at the level we're at, we can do it.
Right.
But there's sometimes it's just hard. And you go sometimes measure by measure, sometimes like line by line. Because luckily with editing and Pro Tools, they can make it sound like magic. I mean, it's literally magic. Like,
right.
Because and then you know what notes you can leave out. I mean, there's whole, like, I'm not going to hear that one. Or, right. you know, like, you can divide up stuff on the stand. Like, if it's 16 notes, like, you do the first set, I'll do the second. You know, we split stuff up. We
gotcha.
And the second player next to you goes, I mean, there's all these little tricks.
Interesting.
That you learn in the studios that, like, okay, we'll do it this way. You know, if it's piano, you start up bow. If you start down bow, people are going to be like, why are you starting down bow? It's piano. It's automatic with music sessions. Piano, upbow.
Gotcha.
You know, it's like there's these little things.
Little things you got to know.
Yeah.
Probably don't. They also don't teach you in college.
No. I think they're getting better about that. I think about preparing you for the real life.
But I think it's also, you went to college here, so that real life here is not real life many other places. Like that, you know, where else do you have still movie scores being done by orchestras and not
Nashville
keyboards, you know? Yeah, right. Yeah,
Nashville and Eastern Europe.
Yeah, right. Eastern Europe.
I mean, and technology's gotten that good where a composer mm-hmm. can literally sit in a room like this
mm-hmm.
and watch his session in real time with perfect audio and everything and give comments. I mean, that's how far it's gotten. So
yeah, I produced a vocal session. Vocalist was in Nashville.
Yeah.
And I sat here.
And he had a picture.
I didn't have the picture part, but I was listening as if I were in the studio, you know, and we were just talking and then it came out great.
Yeah. I mean, with streaming, you know, part of why you get into this business is for residuals.
Right.
And so with the actors, I mean, streaming is sort of, well, streaming hit us first.
Oh, man, like, it decimated the gate.
Music.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
And now everybody's like, oh, man, we didn't plan for this.
Yeah.
It hit everybody. And so
yeah.
I'm sure we'll strike in November, Musicians Union.
Well, that's the thing. Like, for me, it doesn't matter. So yeah. I'm like kind of sitting on the sides watching the actors and the writers and being like, strike, strike, strike. You know, please. Because if you have a union that has any power, because I'm a rogue guy, so the union doesn't do anything for me.
Exactly.
So I'm not even a member anymore because, I don't do enough recording.
Yeah.
And I never really have been that. I mean, I came out here to be a road dog. Like, it's what I love to do. You know what I mean? There's no road guy union. So for me, it's like, there's no power in it. And I also got a little mad when the whole 1099 thing came down. And like, most of my friends work on 1099s. And when it, you know, when they made that sort of illegal for musicians to do.
With the AB, whatever that was.
The prop AB or AB or something. I don't know. I was kind of mad. That's when I stopped paying my dues. Yeah. And I was like, you know what? For me, it doesn't matter. But so many of my friends, like if you now have to start a business and you know, just it's going to cost you so much money to start an LLC and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. If you don't know about that, it's pretty boring if you don't live in LA. But it kind of pissed me off about the union because they were really hardcore behind that because they want everybody to be in the union. And, you know.
I mean, I don't know what the numbers are, but our union gets less and less every year just because the amount of work is less and less.
Right.
You know, so it just sucks.
Yeah.
You know, so. We'll
but it's great
happens.
When you're in a situation like you where you're doing enough that they have the power that you could strike and it would matter.
Yeah.
You know?
I would hope.
I don't know, man.
We're finding out right now. We'll see.
I know.
We'll see.
Well, the thing is like, unfortunately, you guys can be replaced by samples now. So it's a lot.
Still, you can tell.
You can't really replace a.
You can tell, though.
Yeah, but it's like, at what point how long will people care? That's the problem.
I know,
like,
that's the thing.
Spielberg's going to care, but how long is he going to be making movies, you know? Like, and the generation before are listening to music on their phones. So, like, can they tell the difference between a real orchestra and a sample? You know what I mean?
That's...
And the samples get better and better. And,
yeah.
Like, it's just... I feel for you is all I'm saying.
I know.
It's sad.
It is sad. But there's some people that still want us. And...
Yeah.
I mean,
it's great that it still exists here.
Yeah, I mean, and I can't survive solely on my recording work. I have to do everything else because everything else, once you put it together, like doing the orchestras in town, doing the casuals I do, and doing the recording, and I don't really teach. So when I have all those three things going, it's good, you know.
Right.
But if one of those sort of dies down, I'm like, I miss that, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, that's why I'm lucky with my wife. Where?
Yeah, for sure.
When the famine comes, like, we're cool.
Yeah,
we're cool. We're cool.
Yeah. No, it takes two in America.
Yeah, it does. I mean, my mom didn't work until later when I got older, when she could.
Yeah.
And. Yeah, it's fascinating. Like, I don't think I know anybody. Well, I guess you.
Yeah.
And you're in this good, lucky situation.
Boom. And we don't know how long it'll last. You know, right now, everything's great. And it's like, the kid's going to eventually be in school anyway. So maybe she can get back to work then. Or, you know, I mean, whatever she wants to do. It's not like I'm like, you got to stay home now. I'm a 50s father.
How do you?
But, you know, we'll make anything work. But at the same time, it's like, I'm very lucky right this second, for as long as we can make it work, to make it work. I'm a I have to confess something. I love books, but I don't love reading. And it's been something that I've wrestled with since I was a kid. You know, I can read. I have read books, but they're very time consuming. And I've spent most of my time trying to build a music career, which takes a lot of time. But one thing I definitely do a lot of is drive in LA traffic on my way to a gig. And there's a solution that combines those two situations, and it's called Audible.com. Audible has thousands of audiobook titles, and you can listen offline anywhere, anytime. The app is free and can be installed on all smartphones and tablets. And they have just a ton of music-related titles, like All You Need to Know About the Music Business by Donald S. Passman, How Music Works by David Byrne, or Music Production Secrets by Calvin Carter. And you can get a free 30-day trial right now if you visit audibletrial.com/divebarrockstar. That's audibletrial.com/divebarrockstar. I'd like to take a second and thank you for listening to the Dive Bar Rockstar podcast.
Getting the word out is a vital part of what it takes to keep this show on the road, and the easiest way to help is to subscribe wherever you listen, and if you have an extra minute or two, please leave a review. You can also follow our page on Facebook, which is the Dive Bar Rockstar Podcast, or follow me on Instagram at Dive Bar Rockstar. Okay, enough begging. I hope you're having a great time, and once again, thank you for listening.
I have to say, I do love touring.
Yeah.
And I don't get to do it. I mean, I did John Legend, mm-hmm. and I do the one-offs, mm-hmm. and I did a little bit of Bright Eyes last year.
I don't think I know them. I need to look that up.
I
should have.
I won't even.
Go on.
I don't want to sing. I was going to sing, but I don't really quite know the lyrics. And
I'll look it up. I promise.
And I hadn't gotten that much sleep in years.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I was like,
I'm telling you.
Oh, my God.
I know.
And they didn't give us hotels, which I actually appreciate. Oh, you know
interesting.
Why?
Interesting.
Because I didn't have to get up at 3 a.m. and wake up and get it. I slept like a baby.
Yeah.
In that little cocoon.
No, it's the best.
I mean, and I'd wake up and I'd be like, I feel great. This is amazing. I mean, for 1 month last year, I was like, I hadn't gotten that much sleep at all.
Yep.
You know, just it was like perfect.
Yeah. No, I hear
But
you.
I loved it. We went all through the Midwest in the cold.
Yeah. Like,
I don't know how people live out there. It's so freezing.
Oh, I know. I grew up in Denver, so.
Oh, my God.
I hear you. Like if I never see snow again, I'll be a happy, fine. I'll be fine with it. You know?
Single digits. I don't get. Mm-hmm. And how does it get there? There's no snow. It's just single digits. Oh, and you're like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
How did people not just, we should probably just keep going. There's probably something better. They just stayed.
Right.
I don't know. I don't get it.
Hey, the taxes are low. It's free money.
That's true.
It's free land.
I didn't think about that. Yeah.
Yeah, but. I hear you. Well, that's cool. Yeah, I was going to ask you if you prefer that to the studio thing.
I mean, I do. I love it.
Yeah,
cool. And the good thing about the casual thing, I get to leave town, you know, maybe once a month, once every 2 months. You know, which is nice.
Yeah. And casual is like, so I know you from the band called Impulse, which, you know, I think half the band's been on the podcast at this point, but, and that's what I last saw you, but, and it's like a...
I'll never work for Impulse again, I think it's...
Did I say
in
that?
In the bus, yes.
Oh, dang, well.
To Rudy. I laugh.
Well, he's my best friend, so...
I know.
it could be true, like, it is my dream to never work for Impulse again, but at the same time, it's a really... fabulous band. Like,
I know.
It's just not the type of work I enjoy.
I understand.
But they travel. That's kind of the cool thing about it. And mm-hmm. yeah, I was going to ask you about that too. Well, actually, while we're sort of around the subject, so there's an upright bass sitting next to me, you know, and the reason I don't tell anybody that I even own one is because they're just impossible to play in tune.
Oh, yeah.
And so... when I think about you and violinists and like cellists, like especially the smaller ones, the like,
I can't play
what's your
violin.
Relationship?
It's like this. And it feels so small.
Yeah, even to a viola, which is not
viola is quite bigger.
It's quite big.
Yeah, I mean, and they're different sizes of viola. Viola are not like sort of a violin is sort of one size. I mean, you'll get variations, but you can actually make the string length. You know. Like a 15-inch, 15.5-inch, 16, 16.5, 17. Now we're getting super big. Like 17 is like...
wow, huge.
Yeah, 17.5.
You've got a cello on your shoulder.
Yeah, basically. Like it's hard. Violas are hard because they're just bigger. Mm. There's no uniform. So if you pick up someone else's viola, it's going to be different than your viola.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Because
wow.
the string length might be different.
Yeah,
you know?
Oh yeah, for sure.
Violins are pretty uniform.
Mm-hmm.
But once you play a violin... and you go back to viola, you're like, oh my, what? Like, it feels like a completely different. And I have a violin. I just don't dabble in it.
Yeah.
I probably should at this point. But
even a viola compared to the bass, like, there's more space there. So, but then again, I guess you have more margin for error because it's such a longer thing.
I don't know the first thing about this upright string. I know there's two ways to hold the bow,
mm-hmm.
German and French. You know,
right, exactly.
And that's about it.
I do a German. If I have to bow, which again I don't even tell people how I don't if you need a guy who can really bow don't call me. I practiced because you know I bought it and I was like
might as well.
Yeah, actually I got the call for Barry Manilow and they were like, "Do you play upright, right?" And I'm like, "Uh huh," and I went
that day and bought the upright.
That one.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to learn to play this because that's a good gig, you know, and I'll figure it out. And I did a little in college, but I didn't finish and I didn't, you know, that's, but my point is like tuning is such a big thing for you, you know, and string players. And like, is that drive you nuts? Is that something you do well? Is that something that you You kind of mentioned before that it's like I always assume your attitude.
I always assume I'm wrong. And I blend to the second, you know, you just have to be, you need to learn how to adjust immediately.
Right.
Like you don't just hold your, be like, I'm right, you're wrong.
Right.
No, you listen to the section, you blend with the section. Mm-hmm.
And do you prefer like a larger section because it sort of covers things up a little bit versus like you said, like you're a quartet with John Legend. Yeah. That's, you're pretty exposed.
Pretty exposed. And with singers, they always love like those wacky keys. Uh-huh. You're like, oh my God, how many flats?
Yeah.
And sometimes
the worst.
It's easier for us to read it with flats instead of sharps because, I mean, we have like, I remember like, I think they, I forgot what it was. But we were like, can you not make it flats, can you make it sharps?
Right.
Because it's just easier for us to play like visually and everything. Like it's so bizarre. Yeah.
No, I think that's kind of common. Like everyone has their preference, I think, you know.
And we could all agree on it. Like let's have it that way. Not one person was like, no, I insist on the,
Right.
You know, people are cool sometimes. But yeah.
Yeah.
Listen and adjust.
Yeah.
Don't be that person that doesn't adjust or is too thick headed. Like, I just, the very, Richard Rintoul, he said, always assume it's you.
Gotcha.
He was like, I always assume it's me and I always listen and I always adjust. Like, and I do. I'm always like, that was maybe me. I don't know.
Right. Right. No, I hear or, it. Like, it drives me nuts. Like, I even hear great bass players like Stanley Clarke.
Yeah.
He always just seems a little out of, it's never perfect, I guess, is what I'm saying. It's not like, out of tune is a tricky thing when you're doing a solo thing, but it's still, it's just, it's not perfect. And I play a fretted instrument, so it's perfect. You know what I mean? And I just can't do it. It drives my brain nuts.
I mean, that is, I mean, especially bass players when they play like Bach, like like the cello suite, and they're up in the thumb position. I'm like, wow, that is insane. How do you do that?
Yeah. And to keep, if you can keep that in tune, then you're a talented person. But
the bass players in town are ridiculous here in LA.
Yeah.
The upright bass players. I mean, they're just so good.
Yeah.
Where you're like, oh, boy.
That's pretty cool.
You know, the weirdest thing for my life is like, I can't believe I get to work with the people I do.
Mm-hmm.
How lucky I am to like...
Yeah.
Be able to play at all the venues I get to play at and play around the people I get to play at. I never in a million years would I assume that. I mean, I did the work myself, but like, I still, like the way my trajectory was going, there should be no way I get to be doing what I'm doing.
It's a long way from jail.
Yeah, it's a long way from jail, halfway house. Like, you know, I just...
Yeah.
As much as like the feast and the famine, like my next job, where's it gonna be? Like, whenever I get to that job, like I'm always like, I can bitch about it, but I'm always like, look who I get to play with. These are like the top cats in town, and like, you know,
it's
just weird.
Which I should say too, just about the wedding band, is that it's full of the phenomenal top
I know.
Players as well. You know, we're not talking, you know, I dog it a lot, but it's we're talking, and the reading in that situation is not a joke either.
I mean, I don't care what situation. I rarely find myself at a job in LA where I'm like, these people suck.
Right, exactly.
You know, I'm always like, well, I got to keep up, you know? Like, these people are good. They get, I mean, it's just weird, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. We're lucky. We're super lucky.
I know.
You know?
I know. I love it. I mean, I talk a lot about on this podcast. It's just as much a tribute to musicians as it is a tribute to LA. Like, this town gave me everything.
Yeah.
You know, and I moved here from Denver as a, I'm going to be a big star. And I play and sing with Chicago.
Yeah.
So in a way, It happened. You know
it
what
happened.
I mean?
I know.
You know, like, so it's a place where dreams come true for sure.
It is. And I always, I mean,
City of Dreams.
Yeah. That's a good wedding one.
Yeah. I mean,
for the quartet. I don't know. Whatever.
So you, I noticed that you did, you were a part of the Elton John, what was that called? Shoot. The
last album.
Yeah.
Yeah. I got to play strings on a couple of them. I just can't remember offhand which one, because I work a lot for this arranger, David Campbell, who's Beck's dad. And
oh, wow.
And he arranges strings for everybody. Like, I mean, I think he arranged strings for the last Adele album, and that was at Warner Brothers. So we did 2 days there doing strings there.
That's awesome.
And everybody, you know how you get a musician to complain is take away their cell phone.
Yes. That's a bad one.
Well, the first day, everybody was like, oh, son, like, grovel.
Oh, sure.
The second day, a lot of people were like, I'm not giving my cell phone back. I need to, this is when I listen to, like, read the news and stuff. And I'm
right.
Like, I ain't playing. Take my cell phone. I don't need it for the today.
Right, right.
It's fine.
Right.
But, I mean, he does that. I mean, and he's great. Nice guy. Like, you know. And I'm lucky. I can't believe I get to work with him, too. Like,
yeah, totally.
They just released, we did Post Malone, and they just released that song.
Yeah.
Not Kim. Cool. What is it? Overdrive. I don't know. Overdrive, yeah. I think, is the new single.
Gotcha.
And that's him. Like,
that's cool. Strength.
I know. It's. I mean,
that's
sometimes
awesome.
Sometimes they're there and sometimes they're not, you know.
Right.
And so sometimes we get to see famous people like Adele.
Right.
But,
was she there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She was there.
So there's like a lot. Was she singing live or she was just there to
just
witness?
Witness it. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think they put her secret, still his secret name. It was like for the call because they kept it secret.
You know, it's
C E is Adele backwards, but with a C. Chalada.
I don't know. You probably should have said that.
Well, I don't know.
Did you sign anything?
No. Well, probably, but it's released, so it's been out for a couple years. So
right, who knows?
But I always pinch myself when I walk in and I'm like, oh my God, like Elton John. That was,
Well, that's what I was going to ask. It's called the Lockdown Sessions album.
Yeah.
So was it actually everybody in a thing or did you?
No, we did strings at the Village Studios.
Okay.
Because Campbell likes to go there.
They
have a big room
right
there. And it's, you know, it's great.
But you were iconic. All there
just strings.
During the lockdown.
Just strings. Okay. Yeah. And you test, you get
and
paid.
And you can have masks in place.
Yeah. It's not a big deal.
Got you.
I mean, it's gone now, but the union enacted, which was great. So actually the COVID test sometimes was more than the actual job. Like you get $250 a COVID test.
Oh, wow.
And then for the session that paid like streaming, like $230.
Right.
It was a lot of bonus
cool,
money coming in. You know, you take three tests a week, you know,
jeez.
And you're already like $750.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know?
Well, there you go. See?
Yeah.
Maybe I should rejoin.
Nah, no more testing. COVID's done.
Yeah, damn.
It's literally done.
I just joined up for the test. I'm here for my test.
Where do I get that $250? I mean, I don't know. You know, it'll still slip through, but, you know, I guess it's peace of mind, but no one wears masks in the studios anymore.
Right,
like,
yeah.
You know,
right,
I mean, it's
right,
like.
Yeah. So you also play the Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah,
probably quite a bit.
I sub with the Hollywood Bowl Orchestra, and we're doing Quincy Jones 90th this weekend.
That's cool.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
So how many times do you think you've played the Hollywood Bowl?
A lot. I mean, the Philharmonic does most of the dates there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they get worked hard.
Yeah. Right?
With different every night's a different, you know, it's not like a whole weekend of their usual, it's like every night different, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday.
Right.
So I don't play with the Philharmonic, but I had to come in do the Hollywood Bowl shows.
Got you.
And I remember as a kid, they had a recording with Mal Cherry, the music director back when I was a kid. And like I would be like, listen to it. It's all the movie soundtracks. And now I get to play with those people. Like, They're much older now, but cool. Yeah, you know, but
I remember
listening to all like these people, you know, some of them were in the Bull and not in the Bull Orchestra anymore. Cause, but I'm like, I always was like, I want to do that. And here I am getting to play with the Hollywood Bowl.
That's pretty awesome.
With like cool people.
Yeah.
Cool viola section, nice people around, you know.
Yeah.
It's fun.
That's cool. And being from Southern California, is that like a extra cool gig to play? Because I'm from Denver, so whenever I play Red Rocks, I'm just like, this is the dream.
I know. Red Rocks. I played Red Rocks with John, and I was like, wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, wow.
It's special.
That place is like, and it pours rain. In the afternoon, the rain's like coming down the stairs. You're like, are we going to have a show tonight? They're like, don't worry. It always rains in the afternoon.
Yeah. It'll be 20 minutes.
I know.
And it will be done.
I know. And that is a special place. And the Hollywood Bowl is great to play at too. And it's great to go see shows there too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's such a fantastic place to play. It's iconic.
Yeah.
I played my funnest show that I played there was the jazz festival.
Oh, yeah. With who?
Etta James.
Oh, God.
Wow.
That doesn't suck.
I mean, we only played one song, you know, at last, you know, so the song. But I remember being at the backstage and someone like, you have timers and your timer's up, you have to get off the stage. Mm-hmm. And I remember her timer was up and I saw it go from someone asking her manager, like, she needs to get off the stage. He's like, I'm not going to tell her. And it went down the line.
Wow.
To this PA who was like, okay, I'll go. He walked out there and tapped her like, your time. And the manager was right. She immediately said, get the fuck off my stage. Why are you on my stage? And started throwing water at him. Get off my fucking stage. The manager was like, I told you. we were dying.
It's Etta James.
I know. She was wild. She was a little firecracker.
The stuff that she had to have seen in her lifetime, was, you know, like some PA telling her to get off stage, like,
nope.
I will kill you. I know. I've killed people before.
And that's what it seemed like. Her manager was absolutely not going to go out on that stage.
So I kind of developed this sort of common questions I ask everybody.
Okay.
So I usually end the show.
Okay.
For the last few episodes with this, and then I'll stop torturing you. But you've been unbelievably awesome. Like, every story is amazing, and like your story is pretty cool. Like, just the where you've come from and where you've gotten to, and it's a unique instrument to play, you know. And I just think everything about it is so great. So I appreciate you so much for coming.
I appreciate you having me. And it's funny because I love when people see me, they're like, I'm a musician. They're like, oh, you play guitar or something. I'm like, viola. And they're like, I'm sorry, what is that?
Exactly.
Because no one knows what a viola is either.
I know. So I know.
It's like a violin, except it doesn't have an E string. It's a C string. We read. It's like, what does that mean to them?
Right.
Like,
They're
like, it's like a cello. I'm like, it's viola. It's a big violin.
It's what would it be? Like a tenor?
Alto.
Alto.
And then they're like, well, how's it different? And then I'm like, well, instead of having the E string on top, we have a C string, but the three middle strings are like, it's so
it's
nerdy. It's like G, D, A. Yeah. And then instead of having the E string, we have the C string on the bottom. We also read alto clef. And we can also read treble clef too, because we read both as a violist. You read both. And that just, what? Yeah. So it's a cello? And you're like, ah, yes, it's a cello.
Sure.
Whatever. I don't even care at this point. Well, fine.
I know.
Then people get, I mean, to tell people I play viola after they see me, it's like, they're always like, you?
Yeah.
Her? You know?
Yeah. Like, I know. Me too. It's like, that's what, but I love that. Because I just love that sort of, I remember meeting guys, like when I grew up in high school, it was like, you're a jock or you're a musician. There was a few people that wanted to do both, but it was a very, this is what a musician is, this is what a jock is, this is what a woodshop guy is, you know? Like, and then when I went to Berklee College of Music in Boston, I met this bass player who was just such a baseball fanatic. And it just blew my mind that, oh, you're allowed to like baseball and play music, you know, and it was just like, oh, that's fascinating. And, you know, obviously it's just more a joke about how I grew up, maybe, but I don't know, yeah. Or the small town that I grew up in. But I'm just fascinated by people who are just, guess what? We're just people too.
Yeah.
And we're people that like all different things, and we just happen to, but I think there are particularly unique situations, like to go from jail to viola playing for a living on some of the greatest stages with some of the greatest players in the world. That's a pretty fascinating story, you know?
That's why I'm always like, yeah, I'll bitch about the job and I'll complain and be like, this is ridiculous. But yeah, at the same time, I'm like, I can't believe I'm here. Why am I saying this is ridiculous? I can't believe I'm here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I think that's another, that's the other common sort of thing, because we talked about the pressure before, and we talked about that on this, Jamie Hovorko is on, and he has great comments about like just the pressure, because, you know, he ends the night with a trumpet solo over the most famous Eagles song ever known to man. And like, but at the same, so it's the combination of that feeling like, you know, you can get fired any second. You don't want to suck. These guys are probably laughing at you. But you're also like, this is the greatest moment of my life. You know, it's a very interesting thing to be at this level.
It's so hard. Yeah. I'm not good with pressure. Like,
yeah.
I feel it. I feel it.
Yeah.
So,
but you do it.
I do it.
That's what I think a lot of people feel. And that's the the thing. It's not about whether you feel it or not. It's, can you cope?
Yeah.
And you do. Whether you enjoy that or not, that's something as you're getting older too. Like I'm 51. Like I'm starting to get to the place where I'm like, I don't want him anymore.
I don't want to have to be all under that pressure.
Yeah. Like,
it's just too much for my ticker.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was somewhat fun in my 20s, but now I'm like, why? You know, and you hope that your skills progress to a point where, you know, maybe that pressure is a little less just because you've done so much and you can walk into a room now and be like, and have people go, oh, Rodney, you know, and that takes a little of it off. But I don't know. At the same time, then you got kids coming up that are playing their asses off.
I know. And like,
to some degree, if you want to keep playing at this level, that's what it is.
It's
pressure, you know.
It's pressure.
Yeah. And,
you know, people don't want their seats taken, you know?
Right, yeah.
And
there's less seats.
And there's less seats.
Less money. And
nothing's promised to you. It's sort of why, as much as you think it is, it's not promised, you know? And that's a hard thing to deal with, especially as you get older.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because I don't have a 10-year job in an orchestra, you know? You know, so it could end for me tomorrow, you know?
Yeah.
And I just had to do something else. But, you know, right now it's still going.
Yeah.
So I'm still plugging along, you know, hopefully for a few more years.
And you always got weddings.
I always got weddings.
That's what I think.
Those are easier. I get to hire fun people, and people have been doing it for years and rotate in new people. And they're always like, that was amazing. That was so much fun. I never thought it would be like that, playing a wedding. I'm like, well, we're a different breed over here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I try to get a fun crew whenever I have to hire people, like just fun people to hang out with, you know? Like, because you don't want to hang around snobs or people that...
Yeah. I mean, you're playing for them. You don't want them in your band.
Yeah, I know.
It's torturous enough just being around billionaires and like who are treating you like...
The best is like the case, like... what is it? Can you move that? Like, hide your case. This is unsightly. Like, it's my case. Like, you can't have that here. That's hideous. Okay. Where do you want?
Yeah.
Please put it in the bushes.
Yeah, you know? Right. The fake bushes.
Yeah, the fake bushes.
I know. That's what it is. It's like a humiliating. There's a humiliating element to it.
It is.
You know, and being treated. There's those ones where when you get off, you're going to walk this way to the band room, and then you're going to come from the band room back to the stage. Like, don't
directly
be seen anywhere else.
Please.
You're like, I'm a human being, and I'm very highly qualified, highly skilled human being.
I know.
You know, and
they don't care.
They don't care.
You're the hired help.
Yeah.
And that's what most of us will be for the rest of our lives.
Well. Maybe we should just end the show here.
Oh, you got to ask me those questions.
I just got depressed.
Sorry. Don't get depressed because we're happy. We're happy. We have a beautiful family.
These questions seem completely worthless.
No. They're going to be great. Let's do it.
Okay.
You're going to do like Johnny Carson?
Karnak. No, this is more like James Lipton and Inside the Actors Studio. Did you ever watch that?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. They're not hard. It's just stupid. But I feel like they're kind of interesting. And people that aren't musicians will. So the first one, what time do you get up in the morning?
6:37.
Okay.
Yeah.
And see, that's something I find interesting because, like, when I didn't have kids, I'm more like a noon, 1 o'clock.
I would totally do that guy.
Yeah.
I mean,
which is what people, I think of musicians as.
But I mean, my wife has been known to let the kids go do what they want, and we'll sleep maybe till 8.
Gotcha.
On a good day. You know what I mean? Yeah. On a good day. Yeah. And then I tell them the kids will come in on like the worst days and be like, I'm like, out, get out. Like, Dad, it's like some random holiday. Like, happy blah, blah, blah day. I'm like, out. It's too early.
Yeah. Get rid of that iPhone calendar that has every stupid holiday that means nothing. That's funny. Did you graduate college?
Yes. I have a master's. Yes. My undergraduate degree is from viola performance from Cal State Long Beach, and then my master's music from the University of Southern California.
That's awesome.
Fight on, Trojans. I got really big into college football when I was there. Like, we were in Pete Carroll.
Right?
Oh my God, we go to Pete Carroll. It was so much fun. Reggie, like everybody.
Oh, that's so
and
cool.
Now I don't have time to watch any football games.
I'm an NFL guy because it's, you know, it's Sunday.
Yeah, it's easier, right?
College, there's so many teams. I just can't figure it out. Divisions or something. I don't know how it works. So if a gig starts at 9, what time do you get there?
Because most of the time our jobs start at 10.
Got you.
I mean, there's a rare occasion.
If a gig starts at 10, what time do you get there?
I mean,
you're talking about AM, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it depends on where it is, but I always try to give myself enough time to have like 45 minutes an hour on site, ready to go.
Perfect.
So I assume most of the studios, like if I have to go to the west side, it's like at least an hour and a half. So I'll leave like early, like 7:30, you know,
right,
and help like at least prep lunches so my wife doesn't have to do too much or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And help out as much as I can, you know.
I hear you.
So, but yeah, I try to get on the lot or wherever the job is, you know, with 45 minutes, plus or minus. Yeah.
Perfect. How often do you listen to music for pleasure?
Oh, I am a KPCC 89.3. sort of guy.
I don't know that.
It's just is that talk radio.
Yeah. Like it's radio.
Like, you know,
yeah,
talk.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I forgot what Elliest. It used to be called KPCC, like public radio. Now it's like Elliest. But I find we just got a record player and we just got all these crazy records from like our neighbor had an estate sale and literally we went over there and bought these records and we literally will listen to that record player all the time. It's just hard though because you forget it.
Yeah.
Like I just had to buy a new needle because apparently it's been spinning for weeks.
Right.
I didn't even notice.
Nobody pushed the space bar. Yeah,
I was like, what is that noise? Because we rarely hang out in the living room. Mm-hmm. Like we're always in the kitchen or our little bedroom TV room.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm in there, like folding clothes or something. And I had to buy those things are like $50.
Oh, I know. You got a decent one.
Oh yeah, my wife hooked it up. Like it's a really nice. But oh my God, the record. I mean, we bought these records for like $50, and we have like LA Philharmonic records from the late 70s that are in like these you look them up online, they're like $150, $200. Like
that's
so
cool.
We've been going through. I mean, so many different genres and styles. Like, and the kids love it too, because we'll just sit in the living room and play games and watch, you know, do records, like musicals.
Like old school.
Yeah, like classical records, like musicals. We have Les Mis and Miss Saigon.
Yeah.
I have my punk rock records.
Nice.
I have, we have classic rock out. Like, we, my mom's old, like, South Pacific, like, Hawaiian music. Like, I mean, we have such a plethora.
I just
need to find a, like, a container to put them in now and organize them. That's my next thing.
Yeah, that's cool. That's another cool thing if you're back on the road, is like shopping for vinyl when you're out and about, like especially the Midwest. We're just out there and there's like antique. You have to go to an antique store now
to find
them. They don't really have record stores, but sometimes they do. You know, in these smaller towns.
I went to Amoeba because I was like, well, I have a record player now. So.
Right.
Yeah. Don't mind if I do, Amoeba. But it was so, and they it's much smaller now.
Yeah.
And I went,
it moved, right?
Yeah, I moved. Yeah. And I was like, I don't even know what to look for. Like, this is like so much.
Yeah.
Like, do I go look at classical or classic rock or new rock? I don't know.
Yeah.
And so I sort of got overwhelmed. I didn't buy anything.
Yeah.
Because I would go look and I'm like, well, this would be cool, but do we need it? I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
We have so many records we haven't even listened to yet.
Oh, man. Yeah.
So
get through them.
But
so that's cool. But it takes effort.
Yeah. You got to know what you, I think
you're not going to just throw music on like when you were 20 or whatever. And,
no.
You know, like as a musician, it's like we don't just, it's the talk radio as well. Like I'm a podcast guy.
Yeah.
All the time.
I mean, too.
Like, I have to force myself to listen to music just because, like, come on, you should listen to music. You're a musician.
Well, my kids also, like, they have that thing with, like, they could just go, Alexa, play this, and it just plays it.
Right. Like, exactly. I know we have Hey Google.
The worst.
I've got a 2.5-year-old who's like, Hey Google.
Has they found Despacito yet? Oh,
no,
my God. I've listened to that song a million times. Oh. I've listened to, I mean, it's actually grown on me. Like, we sing along.
It's
like
a great group.
I know. Like,
but I think I played it so much in the wedding band, though, too. I was like,
oh my God, not this one.
Can't do
but
it.
But they find the worst. I don't know who teaches them these songs. How did they know the explicit, Alexa, play the worst song that my parents want to hear. And bam, there it comes. Just the worst.
Yeah, totally. All right. We've kind of talked about some of these, so I'll just go one more. What song do you never get sick of playing?
I love Shostakovich. Like, I can't wait. Like, I love playing his symphonies. It's very rare I get to. I bet I played three or four of them, and it's always the same three or four that you play, but you're always like, I love this.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to dig into that.
Yeah, I mean, 9 and 11. Symphony 9 and 11 are really good. And I just love them. But anyways, that's...
No, that's awesome.
And he has some great string quartets, too. And his final... I mean, I started learning it. His final piece was this solo viola piece. And it's based on Moonlight Sonata. And it's... I've sort of worked through it, but it's hard. Like, I don't have the concentration level I did as a kid. I never... played it when I was in school, and I always wanted to. But someone will probably correct me if I'm wrong, but what I've heard is it's his final piece he wrote, and he was on a train and going back by all the just the because they execute a lot of Jews in Russia as well, and he saw all the death and destruction. And that's sort of what it was based upon, him like seeing the death and destruction going on in his country on the same people. I mean, it's horrible, but it's a good piece.
But it makes for good music.
It
makes for good art.
I mean, it's pretty incredible.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. I've definitely never had classical music set on the Dive Bar Rockstar podcast. That's awesome.
Well, I was thinking about contemporary songs, and I just don't have any because it's like, it's just, I always loved the renditions that these bands do and the mashups and whatnot and how they take it through and how a lot of these songs sound the same.
Right. Like,
there's a great video of a guy, a comedian that takes Pachelbel's Canon and just puts every single song in it. And it's like, it's like, oh,
yeah.
Oh, you're always like, oh, Yeah. I mean, I guess that's
which is technically four, why you five. Can't copyright a chord change.
It is weird
because they're all from same hundreds of years ago. You know? Man, this has been awesome.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for all of this. This is just, I don't know. It's just so great. It was everything I wanted the podcast to be. You know, yeah. I love the. Just all the different perspectives and just what it takes to make a living, because it's not easy. And then anyone who's doing it is doing the impossible at this day and age, you know.
And it's only going to get harder and harder and harder.
Yeah.
So it sucks, but that's just reality, you know.
So let's go get a tattoo. You said it's been a while. let's go do it, man.
I don't even know what I would get. I think my next one will be.
Shostakovich.
Just all the way down. Shostakovich. And they'd probably misspell it, you know.
And no one would know.
No one would know.
What's a viola and Shostakovich? Is that a drink?
I will eventually get my kids' names, but
yeah,
it just hurts so much. I mean, I've gotten tattoos in the most... horrendous places. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't think I can do this.
Yeah. I got two in the easiest spots. Yeah. Like, this is just nothing.
Like, that hurt. Seriously.
Oh, God. Right.
I was like,
that's what I heard, too. And like, you're up against bone there, too. Like,
it hurts. It hurts.
All right. Well good talking to you, man.
Thanks for coming out. Having me and invading your house.
Oh, no. It's awesome. Beautiful. Thanks for coming here. It always sounds better when they come here. The Zoom thing drives me nuts. So
oh, no.
Thank you for coming.
It was only half an hour.
Oh, perfect.
Perfect. Thank you, Aaron.
Well, that was just awesome. I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. It was interesting when he talked about income streams, because I think that is a perfect little rundown of how all of us really make it out here. It's never really one thing. You gotta do the studio stuff. You gotta do the live gigs. You gotta do the club work sometimes, and you have to do the teaching thing sometimes, and like whatever. It's really about having many, many income streams at this point, because it's hard to just have that one gig that's gonna do it all for you, because it's just music is going through a tough time right now. It's not making the money that it did in the 90s or the 80s when guys were, you know, becoming millionaires as side guys. It's a really more tricky time right now. It's just about how many income streams you can create for yourself. I also thought it was interesting that he can tell you the artist. This is a very common thing, I think. He can tell the artist that bought him his house. You know, or that allowed him the income to buy his house. And it's not even just about income in the music world. It's about having W-2 income, because most of us work, you know, self-employed for a long, long time and just get 1099s, and a bank doesn't really take those seriously, as he said. But when you get that first gig where you're being paid from the artist's corporation, and then now you're an employee of that artist and you're getting W-2s, it's just so life-changing. And can allow you to show income on a level that a bank will trust and understand, even though it's really no different. And most of these artists, they work when they work. It's not like you're rarely on a salary, but for some reason, the banks like that better. Anyway, my guy was Dwight Yoakam, the one who allowed me to finally buy a house. One of the main reasons I wanted to have Rodney on, because what's so inspiring to me is that just his path. He's had such an unusual path to get to the music business and to be so successful at it. It's just amazing. And I play golf sometimes, and I'm horrible at it, but it is something I do from time to time. But what I think is amazing about golf, and I think Rodney's a good example, it's a metaphor for life in a sense that even Tiger Woods will shank it into the woods sometimes and out of bounds, and it just have awful shots. But it's not really about that shot. It's about your next shot, and it's about your next shot and your next shot. And I think Rodney kind of shanked it in the third or fourth hole of his life and career. But after that, he started making better shots, and he started making good decisions, and he got himself back on the green with not too many strokes. And I think that's a really good thing to keep in mind, that it's really possible if you can keep your mind in the right spot, and you can work hard and just take it one decision at a time and make good decisions. It kind of doesn't
matter how many bunkers you land in, as long as you get out of them and you learn the lessons and you try hard not to get back in them. But it's a really inspiring story for me. It's pretty neat. He brought up the word pedagogue, which I love that word so much. It's not one that comes up in the pop rock circles very often. It's a very college word, very heady for the dive bar rock star podcast, but it essentially means teacher. Greek origin, comes from Middle English. I'm not sure the Scrabble score on it, but it's a great word. I think it makes the podcast seem smarter. AB 5 was the assembly bill in California that was meant to make it harder to be independent contractors, essentially. It changed the rules on what defined employees, and it really was affecting musicians. It was meant for Uber and the ride-sharing people, but the musicians union really got behind it too because they want more musicians to be employees and get paid benefits and stuff. But the problem is there's so many musicians that work for 1099 income. And that means if you want to book a bar gig for your band and you're the band leader, you would essentially have to set up an S Corp or an LLC to pay your people because you'd have to treat them like employees, which means $800 a year at least for corporate tax. And it costs a lot of money just to set it up. And you got to pay, an accountant or a lawyer to do it just to pay your people. And then you got to take out, employment tax and like just to play like a $400, $100 a piece kind of bar gig. So it was really going to be devastating. And so eventually some really great musicians got on it and met with the state senators and stuff. And they worked out an exemption for musicians. And the union was involved with those talks and they all worked it out. So it didn't end up being, so bad, but it was potentially devastating. So it kind of perturbed me, I guess, to say the least. I wasn't a big fan of the union at that time. And for a live musician, a touring musician, the union really doesn't do anything for us. It's really meant for studio musicians, guys who play on a lot of records, and definitely the movie industry and people who are in orchestras. But if you're out here on the road doing what I do, the union doesn't do anything for you. And even if you're playing in a union house, it's more for the crew of that house. It has nothing to do with the musicians at that point. So, I'm glad it all worked out. But the musicians union, not so useful for a guy in my situation. Well, that is the show. I hope you enjoyed it and got a lot out of it. And if you ever have any questions, please feel free to reach out on Facebook or Instagram or TikTok or fanmail@divebarrockstar.com and let me know because I'm happy to answer anything. And I try to get to a lot of things at the end of the show here, but I know that sometimes I miss stuff. So until next time, I hope you are enjoying life and I will talk at you on the next one. I'm a dive bar
rock star. Wow, you've made it to the end. I'm hoping it's because you completely enjoyed yourself and are now filled with knowledge and inspiration to move forward with your dreams. If that is the case and you would like to stay informed of new episodes, live events, and general news, please go to divebarrockstar.com and sign up for the mailing list. If you have any questions, comments, corrections, or complaints about anything you hear on the show, please email me at fanmail@divebarrockstar.com and you may even end up on the show. We at the Dive Bar Rockstar Podcast, with all of our hearts, thank you for listening, and remember, it's all about dreams.